U.S. internationally acclaimed Iranian author, and you mentioned Jafar Panahi, and we're going to talk about him right now in the Oscar nominations. The 2026 Oscar nominations have just been released. Nominees include several films we've covered on Democracy Now! Ryan Coogler's film Sinners has been nominated for a record-breaking 16 times, including for Best Director and Best Picture. Also, Delroy Lindo for Best Supporting Actor and Michael Jordan. You can go to our website, Ryan Coogler's interview with us. Other Oscar nominees include The Voice of Hindra Job, and It Was Just an Accident for Best International Feature Film, Jafar Panahi's film, and also for Short Film, Armed Only with a Camera, The Life and Death of Brent Renaud, for Best Short Documentary. You can visit democracynow.org to see our segments on all of these films. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org. Non-commercial, community-powered radio. Thursday at this time, it's the Northern Sun Radio News Show with Don Olson and back today, Dave Gudnick. And we're going to start off with Dave having some comments about the last segment on Democracy Now!
Yeah, thanks, Don. The latter speaker referred very obliquely, politely, you might say, to the failure of military intervention typically to make these situations worse. And I want to point out the deep involvement of the Mossad for Israel, British intelligence and U.S. intelligence in trying to overthrow the Iranian regime. We're lacking context in a lot of what was said there. And I want to talk about a couple of things that led up to the recent violence. And Secretary Besant in Davos just this week acknowledged that the plan was regime change in Iran. And he called it a statecraft war, more like an economic hitman war, if you want to refer to that great book. And Besant is a good candidate because he worked with George Soros to destroy and bring down the UK pound sterling a number of years ago. So he's an expert in financial manipulation. And in late December, right at the time of Netanyahu's visit to Trump, they launched an economic war against the Iranian economy and through financial manipulation, international were able to greatly damage the value of the rial, and this led to tremendous suffering. I think the value, I think, went down at least 40%. And so the merchants, not protesting the regime, protesting the lack of protection and economic programs by the regime, since their circumstances were very dire as the value of the rial crashed. And after 2 days of mostly nonviolent intervention and protest, then the guns came out on the side of the protesters as well as the government. Okay, where did the protesters get the guns? They got them probably from the same place that they got the machines to download the Starlink outlet. Sorry, I couldn't think of Starlink for a minute there. And apparently at least 40,000 of these were infiltrated into Iran over quite a long time. This certainly predates Trump. And when the struggle turned violent with the help of the Russians, they've figured out how to shut down Starlink, which everybody previously believed was not possible. And this prevented all the protesters who were linking up with Starlink, not the conventional government-endorsed internet access, but Starlink. And the Russians showed them how to shut it down and also where to track down all the holders of the devices. And so these people were traitors to their country, and they're among the many who were killed. Okay, the people who were operating the Starlink to coordinate the protest initiated by Mossad, Brits in the U.S., were among those, not surprisingly, who were killed for their activities to overthrow the government. And so I just want to point out some of the background here that is a result of an attack, longstanding war on Iran by those countries just mentioned, Israel, Brits, and the U.S., and it started financial, and it had the Starlink element, and it had guns.
Yes, it's boy, that really adds a lot to last week we had Jeffrey Sachs on, and he was very eloquent in his going into the fact of how the U.S. Was undermining the economic situation in Iran, and it's just causing the chaos, as well as what the how this can be done just to, you know, make it intolerable for people how they want to live their lives.
Right, and there's an obscure tie here with the timing, because there's the financial attack led by Bessin, as explained, Netanyahu visit to Trump end of the year, into the new year, and then a couple of days later, the attack on Venezuela. So I believe there's connections to be explored there, too, but it may be, in part, just flooding the zone, as has been said, to have so many conflicts and dramatic actions going on that people have trouble reacting. Of course, this is happening domestically as well in this lawless country.
Indeed, indeed. Well, we've got a lot of other things we want to cover. Should we go to the tape we had just to have some more stuff on?
It's up to you.
Do you have let's play a little bit of Karen Kwiatkowski, who's a United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel retired. First time we've had her on the show. She was on Judging Empire, Judging Freedom with Judge Napolitano.
I think it's going to come back to the point I just alluded to, which is that we are a lawless, rogue nation, both internationally and domestically.
Well, it's hard to underline that enough.
Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Tuesday, January 20th, 2026. A year ago today, Donald Trump was inaugurated into his second term. 3 years from today, presumably, he will leave. Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski joins us now. Thank you, Karen, for your time and your thoughts. As always, you have a fabulous piece. It's at judgenapp.com. It's at lewrockwell.com and elsewhere, called Trump's Neo-Colonialist Reach Around. And I commend everybody to reach it. It is pure. Colonel Kwiatkowski. It is articulate, well-researched, and profoundly courageous. Why do you suppose Trump tried and failed at two regime changes in the past 4 weeks, Caracas and Tehran?
Yeah, I think he's panicky at the real situation in this country, the country that he is so-called, you know, trying to fix, trying to make great again. You know, he loves the military. Our military is one of our, it's a handicap almost to have a military with the reputation that our military has. And yet, really any check that military writes, it cannot cash. I'm not picking on the military, but we have a system that sucks money and puts it into private pockets, and aside accidental benefit of that is you get military weapons, and we get weapons that are extremely expensive. The only reason we have a market for American weapons today, not always, it hasn't been this way, but today the only reason we have a market is because we strong arm our so-called allies into purchasing our stuff. That's a fake economy. You know, Trump likes to talk about fake things. In many ways, our military system, it's a fake defense. It defends nothing. And in terms of offense, it's really unaffordable and very precious. So it's not what any country would want, and that's what we have. And I think he wants to he wants to impress people with something. But the problem is, you know, we've been at the top of the world order, so to speak, for quite a while. And so many countries that are getting stronger, smarter, better than they ever were, watch us very closely. They watch the United States. If they're interested in, if they're worried about us, they watch our military very closely. If they want to emulate us, they look at our economy. And those people who, those countries and the rest of the world that looks at America, they're no longer impressed. They are not impressed. And Trump doesn't like that. He wants to impress them. So, he's in many ways, he's just throwing weight around, which is how I see it. Now, are there people advising him that, oh, Mr. President, you should coup this country, you should get a new leader here, we should run the world in this way and that way, and this is how we do it? Yeah, there are people telling him that. The neocons have always said that. And there's other people that have their own agendas, and they know Trump's weaknesses. I mean, the man loves to be flattered, wants to be the most powerful man in the world, wants to appear as the great decider, which is, I thought that was George W. Bush and we were over that. But no, I mean, Trump wants to be the great decider. He will determine how things are. So we're watching an imperial personality play out his final days, weeks, and months on the stage.
Usually when empire expands and colonializes property throughout history, the purpose is to send assets back to the mother country. When we expand and colonize, it costs us money. I mean, that's why we have 750, I don't even know the number anymore, Colonel, military installations around the world. It might be as high as 900. It depends on how you count them. Some are full-time, most are. Some are, bigger than Manhattan, and some of them are very small. But they're all over the world, and they're all manned by human beings, and they all cost money, and they all add to our debt. So other than gratifying a childish, one point you said you think he was being influenced by cartoons that he watched as a child, other than gratifying his childish impulses, what do we gain? How does the average American gain that Nicolas Maduro is now rotting in a hellhole in Brooklyn? How does the average American gain that 1,000 people were killed on the streets of Tehran due to agitations, IDF, Mossad, CIA, and MI6?
They don't gain. They don't gain. And the empire is, of course, as you say, it's costly, and it's not really, it doesn't enhance our wealth. But what the empire has done since World War II, for sure, is caused other countries to want to hold dollars, to want to have dollars. And if people want dollars and you're in the business of printing them without real correlation with real productivity or anything else, then you can have that game going for a while. And that's the game that we have had going. We print dollars, the rest of the world takes those dollars and gives us some stuff. And Americans feel like they're very wealthy, or they have. Now, we know today that they don't feel wealthy. They haven't been for some time. But, our empire is a little different. But in the, post-World War II period, we benefited Americans in a sense by living off the wealth of the world, living off the productivity of the rest of the world. And we didn't really see it that way. Most Americans didn't think about it at all. But the people in power know. And now people don't want our dollar. And what do we produce? Very little. I mean, we do have oil. And now that we stole Venezuela's oil, we have a little bit more. If we can get it out of the ground, if we can process it, and make a profit. But it's a game that the elites have been playing around this country for some time. And the rest of Americans are only now waking up to it. I think that's really the problem. And we're only waking up to it because so many Americans are actually suffering. They they're living a worse, lower level lifestyle. They have more debt and less property than any previous generation. They're not happy. And when you're not happy, you look around and you say, well, why am I not happy? And we're starting to figure it out. But the empire is the problem. And I think in that article you mentioned that was out this week, the biggest problem that our country has is that we are an empire. That's the only problem we need to solve. You solve that, every other problem goes away.
Mm. Why does he want a police state? Who in their right mind would want that?
That's Karen Kowski.
Can't hear you.
Karen Kwiatkowski, U.S. Air Force, Lieutenant Colonel, retired, talking about empire of another name. And there we go. Now I have it on the wrong. That was Karen Kwiatkowski, U.S. Air Force, Lieutenant Colonel, retired. She was on Judging Freedom with Judge Napolitano. And I have Dave Gutnick here, and we're going to now talk about a lot of the other things.
Well, she summarized concisely a really important dynamic that has allowed Americans to think, oh, we are the greatest, the richest, and so on, when in fact it's been based on counting on the rest of the world, recycling U.S. dollars, which we have a tremendous foreign trade deficits, though they recycle the dollars in U.S. treasuries, which keeps the whole game going. But what's now referred to as the great financial crisis of 2008, these things really came to a head, and the solution was for the U.S. to print trillions of more dollars. So what we really have is an empire of debt. We're still extracting wealth from other countries in classic colonial style, but we have this unique dollar diplomacy arrangement since 1971. We got off the gold standard, and then we made a deal with the Saudis, which is held up for now. But what's happening is the rest of the world is really increasingly not wanting to hold all these dollars, increasingly bothered by, if not outraged by, U.S. international behavior. And so there's less and less of dollars in trade. It's still by far the biggest currency in world trade, but there's less interest in buying U.S. bonds. And so we are in an increasingly shaky position when we are counting on financing by the rest of the world, and that includes Britain, China, Japan, and more. And we actually, to talk about the current Greenland crisis, one reason that a number of commentators have said that Trump backed down was because the stock market crashed the very day he made this announcement and claim that, you know, we were going to take, quote unquote, Greenland. And so the thing that can and will restrain our empire follies is the state of the economy, and he loves the stock market, so especially the state of the stock market. But there's a lot more in trouble in this economy than simply the stock market.
Yes, and to make sure that everybody else in the world uses the U.S. system, they have a thing called the SWIFT accounts, where all the transactions have to go through this SWIFT account.
And it's because of weaponizing that in particular that more and more nations have wanted to find ways to trade in their own currencies, real, renminbi, and many, many others. This is growing by quite a bit. And they don't want to have to keep reinvesting in these imperial adventures. Like Sweden, for example, has now in the past year almost entirely divested from its pension plan U.S. treasuries and U.S. investment. So this is just an example. Gold, because of all these things, has become more and more important as nations want something behind dollars to hold their wealth in. And so gold is at all-time highs, and this is in a number of countries around the world. Of course, China, and of course, Russia. Russia's a big producer. In fact, an ironic result of the SWIFT financial system that Don just referred to is the creation of a new system that China and Russia have used, and BRICS is in BRICS countries, of which there are now many, are increasingly able to use this as well. And I wanted to make mention, there's just one thing to drop off the Iran story, is that being a member of BRICS, Iran could have prevented a lot of the financial damage by just asking for a big loan from China, which wouldn't have been that big for China. What it would have made a big difference for Iran. So I think that they missed an opportunity there, and they do have potential allies in Iran. So again, the gold is now an indicator of countries wanting to get away from the dollar for various reasons, including the fact that it's got a mountain of debt over here, and that debt is so huge, it's probably unpayable. And we're now spending more in annual interest on the debt than even the War Department.
Which is
over $1 trillion per year.
$1 trillion per year is quite a bit. And the way the big, beautiful bill that Trump spent last year lauding is guaranteed to increase the debt. It's a cutback on so many ways that might have income coming into the U.S. Treasury Department, but everybody says it has to only increase the debt. Odey, what else, what other kind of areas should we cover?
Well, we have to acknowledge that, you know, locally we've been invaded. Everybody knows this by now, but we can hardly ignore being invaded by an army of masked, armed, warrantless, racist raids by an out-of-control federal police force. And so we have extremely serious situation here, and as yesterday morning's news conference by elected legislators made clear, this is not just a Minneapolis-St. Paul thing. We had people from numerous cities surrounding throughout Minnesota, elected legislators talking about how it's a problem in their city. It's a problem in Duluth and St. Cloud and Wilmer and Rochester and so on. And so this is an attack, and a vindictive attack on the state of Minnesota, which is way beyond immigration enforcement. It's a punishment for the state of Minnesota for declaring sanctuary cities and for its politics in general.
Yes, and I think that they are wanting to take it down, not only as the columnist for the business pages last Sunday said, to change the color. They call it, you know, make it more white in this country, in this state. But also, I think that Minnesota is one of 21 states which sends more money to the federal government than it gets back in payments. And Trump is really even making that more of a cutback to Minnesota. But I think that the biggest thing is with taking a lot of people who are, you know, integral for this or that part of the Minnesota economy. I think they want to take down the Minnesota economy and to drive it down because there's a certain amount of opposition to the ways that people have been using some of the excess or the wealth that is able to be distributed around in somewhat welfare-like type ways, and that this is a bad example to the rest of the country. And so they want to make sure that Minnesota does not have the resources to do these things. So they cut back on medical assistance, so making then necessary for the state of Minnesota, which has a long-term program of covering people, to use what funds it has to use it for this. And we've reaching the point where now when they're talking about when they getting rid of the ways of covering bird flu, that there isn't ways of covering it, that there's reaching the end of it. And so I think this is just a downgrading of the health and safety of Minnesota and actually many other states in this country.
The budget reconciliation bill, by the way, has a mere $75 billion allocated for ICE. So that gets approved. We're in for a lot more hellscape here and elsewhere. I want to mention also, you know why it's racist, because they're arresting people based on their accent and the color of their skin. And it's also blatantly unconstitutional. Now there's clear evidence, thanks to a whistleblower leak of an internal memo from 2025 within ICE, but they don't want to share it with everyone because it's so blatantly illegal, so they have people read it, but they don't get a copy. And what it says is you can enter a house with a mere immigration judge warrant. You did not need a judge's warrant. This is blatantly in violation of the Fourth Amendment, and numerous lawyers have already said this is exactly what the Fourth Amendment is written to prevent, and why we had a revolution against the British was the unwarranted invasion of homes.
Because it can't be just some administrative fiat that ICE can go into people's homes, but it has to be signed by a judge, a federal judge. And that Senator Blumenthal has been received some copies of this, and he has started this over the last day or so talking about it, because this is just one more blatant disregard, breaking of the law, breaking of the whole Constitution, what's going on in this country.
These people are told their actions are justified. They are now only getting 8 weeks of Department of Homeland Security before they go out armed and violating people. And they had 12,000 new hires in 2025, and many of them get up to $50,000 signing bonus. So this is how it's put in place.
Yes, it's it's hard for a lot of people to turn that money down, and it's a conundrum that people being able to go out and do things with their masks on. They feel that sometimes they can get away with anything.
It's a test of our judicial system as well as a test of a bunch of other things in our society, and the judicial system has been greatly weakened, just like Congress has been weakened even more. Really feckless and mostly worthless, in my opinion, in the situation we're in. They could speak up, they could do something, but I don't see it happening.
And I mean, even Republicans who are supposedly rock-rib defenders of the Constitution, defenders of the rule of law, they've grown all of a sudden silent.
Now they're even sending kids out of state, another blatantly illegal move.
Well, we have... Minnesota is responding to this.
Yeah, at least 80 other cities, too, are going to be sponsoring strike and protest actions tomorrow.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, a lot of places all over the country. I think New York was one of the first to announce it, but just this morning I read it was at least 80.
Yeah, I was so heartwarmed when a week ago when there were demonstrations here, 1,000 was across the country. Now to hear that there's 80 people going for a general strike.
80 cities. At least.
80 cities.
And, I have a lot of praise for the protests and the example Minnesotans have shown up in largely nonviolent methods. And we're sure going to need all the legal action we can afford as well to try to slow these people down in the courts as well. And then I should make mention also of another good effort that lots of people are helping their neighbors with shopping and, you know, medical appointments and things like that when they're afraid to go out. So check out, there's good things happening. Defend our fellow citizens.
Yes, and I was at Seward Co-op at Linden Hills yesterday, and they're closing down tomorrow. So, yeah. Maybe other co-ops are too, I just don't know. But so do your shopping today, because a lot of places are going to be closed tomorrow.
A couple of other things I want to mention. There's new Minnesota legislation, which is going to be introduced or has been introduced, which will allow civil lawsuits for constitutional violations, of which we are seeing plenty. And this kind of law already exists in Maine, where there's more ICE attacks going on, Massachusetts and California. So that's just one thing that was mentioned in yesterday morning's elected legislators news conference. And I want to also mention one specific thing because, you know, this is highlighting the lack of democracy in this country and the lack of citizens to really influence things unless they get massively organized and cause lots of trouble. And there's a long history of strikes and general strikes, not always successful. And I just wanted to point to some good discussion of this by Jeremy Brecher, who's a well-known labor historian and has an article in ZNet, as well as the same article at wagingnonviolence.org. And he reviews some of the aspects that we need to think about as we escalate our protests and escalate our numbers toward a general strike or other protests. So we're going to need to be thinking much more seriously about how to change things, and it's not going to be at the midterm elections. We've got to do something quite a bit sooner than that. So Jeremy Brecher in ZNet, as well as wagingnonviolence.org.
Yes,
good article. And there's some other articles there at Waging Nonviolence, but this is one I want to recommend because people need to think about the potential of strikes and general strikes.
And the Brecher is B-R-E-C-H-E-R.
That's right.
So he has a book out. I'm sure it's out of print, but it was quite good. And it's there has been news at times in this country. And I think I cut off Judge Napolitano was asking about why does Trump want a police state or whatever.
That. Oh, a lot of people want police states. If you're afraid of the people that you rule over, you must have a police state. That's a must-have. In fact, you'll go to the next guy that you hate who has a police state, and you'll try to model your new police state off the one he has. So, yeah. If you're an occupying power, needs a police state because you have enemies in your midst. If you're we have a two-party system, but we always get the same guy every single time. So we have a one-party system, which means we are in tyranny. So when people wake up and realize that they live under tyranny, guess what? The government needs a police state to keep those folks in line. You know, there's a reason that cops are knocking on doors about people's Facebook posts. There's a reason for that. They are extremely nervous. The government is extremely nervous about the people that it rules over, that it really is supposed to serve day and night. You know, that's the only mission government has, really, is to follow the Constitution, and the Constitution is designed to preserve our freedom and our productivity, our liberty, all these things. But when government stops doing that and the people wake up to it, you need a police force. I mean, seriously. You know, we could go back to the any previous empire when it fails, or any previous really rotten government when the people revolt. It's not pleasant when people revolt against their government. It can be very bloody, and it can be very damaging to the people, the elites. And everybody says, oh, the elites have bunkers, they'll get away. Well, will it? Maybe. Let's see. Let's see if they do.
Here's a clip from the police chief of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis, talking about the terrors of ICE.
We, as law enforcement community, have been receiving endless complaints about civil rights violations in our streets from U.S. citizens. What we're hearing is they're being stopped in traffic stops or on the street with no cause and being forced to demand paperwork to determine if they are here legally. As this went on over the past 2 weeks, we started hearing from our police officers the same complaints as they fell victim to this while off duty. Every one of these individuals is a person of color who has had this happen to them. In Brooklyn Park, one particular officer that shared her story with me was stopped as she passed ICE going down the roadway. When they boxed her in, they demanded her paperwork, of which she's a U.S. citizen and clearly would not have any paperwork. When she became concerned about the rhetoric and the way she was being treated, she pulled out her phone. In an attempt to record the incident, the phone was knocked out of her hands, preventing her from recording it. The officer had their guns drawn during this interaction. And after the officer became so concerned, they were forced to identify themselves as a Brooklyn Park police officer in hopes of slowing the incident and de-escalating the incident down. The agents then immediately left after hearing this, making no other comments, no other apologies, just got in their vehicles and left. I wish I could tell you that this was an isolated incident. This isn't just important because it happened to off-duty police officers, but what it did do is we know that our officers know what the Constitution is, they know what right and wrong is, and they know when people are being targeted, and that's what they were.
I want to switch to the parallel lawless behavior internationally, because not only are they directly connected through the same administration, but they're connected because this is our history. We've been a law-breaking with supremacist outlook and a warring stance dating in the current circumstances to at least back to the 1990s. Project for New American Century and the Department of Defense released important statements about the unipolar dominance of the world by the U.S., and this was when what we had, what we thought we had, and we were not going to allow any peer competitor. And so since then, it's been war, NATO expansion, and more war. And I think that just like U.S. citizens are waking up to the absolute lawlessness of the Trump regime, Europe is now waking up to the international law that is being flouted by the U.S. And Canadian Prime Minister Carney made some really powerful statements, maybe among the best at the World Economic Forum this week. And I encourage people to check out Carney's remarks. Really, it's a shift. A major shift in the relationship and the definition of what's going on internationally. He says the rules-based order, we all went along with it, we, Europe and Canada and our, quote, allies, we went along with it because we benefited from it. But now we should stop pretending. It was a lie, and it's a lie now. And he received a standing ovation at the World Economic Forum. And I know Trump didn't get a standing ovation for his meandering, incoherent remarks.
And the Prime Minister of Canada, I listened to As It Happens on Minnesota Public Radio on 10 to 11 on weeknights. And first time ever, Canada is drawing up plans of how to deal with a physical attack on Canada. So it's coming down to it. Dave, what else have you got?
Well, let's touch on Venezuela briefly, where again, we're an outlaw nation. We've been on a long-term campaign since the Bolivarian Revolution and get rid of Chavez, tried to assassinate him. Maduro, we tried to assassinate him. Now we've got him and his wife in a Manhattan jail. There's no reporters on the ground there, which makes it really tough to get a good picture of what's going on. I mean, there's some very informed observers, but it's been a challenging for finding any good media coverage. Commenting on a couple of factors going here. Oil, yes, of course it's a factor, but the fact is the U.S. Companies, other than Chevron, which has been already in there by special permission, told Trump that this was not a very profitable or attractive situation. So there's no clear breakthrough going on here in the oil front. We have started to sell a little bit. My understanding is it's going to Europe.
Some $500 million are sold, and it went to one of the Arab Emirates.
Okay. But the situation is still unclear there, you know, whether that will actually lead to dramatic shift in the oil economy. So kind of unlikely for several reasons. But, of course, this is hurting Venezuela, which had been under extreme sanctions. And it's, you know, it's unclear just what the strategy is there. A lot of confusion, as is typical for the Trump regime. Rodriguez, the new head there, is kind of ambiguous herself, in my opinion. Her father was a revolutionary killed in the struggle, and she's a nationalist, but she's also a Zionist. And after she was took office recently, who was the first official U.S. visitor? Not the vice president, not the ambassador. It was the CIA. So I think there's a deep connection going on there. I don't know all of how it's going to play out. She's coming to the U.S. very soon to visit Trump, probably get instructions on how to proceed.
You know, it's interesting that much of the our governmental structure, minus Maduro and his wife, are still in charge in Venezuela.
I think they had to give up on the idea of actually invading, which would have been an utter catastrophe in a nation that large and with a lot of opposition. So I think they're trying for some, you know, halfway measure to control and run what happens there.
Well here's, I started to think about it, and I did catch a short clip of Trump saying, well, we're modeling this, essentially saying, we're modeling this after what happened in Iraq. There they fired all the government, they got dissolved the army, and all they did was create a bunch of people who were became members of ISIS, and they were attacking us. So they are consciously leaving much of the structure in place, with the proviso, of course, that they're going to keep a clampdown on what's going on.
Right. They're aggressive, militaristic, acquisitive, and ideologically driven. I want to make mention in that regard Cuba. I worry a lot about Cuba, who's really been suffering under sanctions, and now they are probably getting cut off of their oil from Venezuela, and I'm hoping that Mexico can really step up, and I also hope that Canada can really step up, because both of these countries have the type of heavy oil that Cuba has been receiving and can process. So, yeah, the situation is far from resolved, and it looks very difficult for Cuba unless some of the other allies or potential allies of Cuba step up. And I want to make a mention of a famous quote by one of our brilliant American writers and anti-imperialist voices, Mark Twain, who said that war was invented so Americans could learn geography.
Yeah, it that sure does help. Well, Cuba, of course, has been under illegal sanctions for many, many decades. And every time it's brought up in the United Nations, the U.S. loses. It's usually the U.S., Israel, and a few Pacific Islanders that vote to uphold it. And so that continues on, but it is illegally maintained.
Yeah, we flouted the world over and over and over in with regards to Cuba and with regards to Israel's behavior. But that's not good enough, I guess, that we can just veto everything. And so now we need this Board of Peace, a total farce, which you have to spend $1 billion to buy into. And Trump is going to be the head of that for life, an absolute comic book, ridiculous notion. And yet some of our, quote, friends, unquote, want to. You know, get on the right side of the big man, and so they've already agreed to join this thing. But it's an absolute farce. And first it was just going to be Gaza, and now it's saying it's some kind of world council. So he wants to replace, in his fantasy, the United Nations.
Well, Trump, well, acts like he's the king of the U.S. Now he wants to be the emperor of the world. He wants to control everything. He wants to be the head of it. And well, he's going after Macron, and in president of the head of France, who is refusing to do it, although, as on today on Democracy Now!, they had a really good segment on Yanis Varoufakis about how all the time that the France under Macron has ignored things about Gaza, what Israel is doing, and the like, and many other things. But it's the whole thing is the response. I was quite heartened that the headline in yesterday's paper, I didn't get my paper today, but Trump brings new U.S. imperialism to Europe. So people have to start using what is going on. And Dave, as you were talking earlier, it's getting worse and worse.
Well, there's a real continuity of agenda I want to point to, because people think just Trump, 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 and he is possibly the worst and ugliest president within memory, but there's a continuity of agenda, again, dating back to at least the 1990s under Clinton, Bush, Obama, Biden, Trump. We are determined to recreate the world of the 1990s, where we thought we were the supreme unipolar power of the world, and we're not going to allow any peer competitors to arise. Well, it's too late for that now, but we're still acting that out and, creating more trouble and more wars. And I want to make clear what Don and Yanis were talking about there. It wasn't just France. It wasn't just Germany. It was much of Europe that went along with the blatant violation of law, both by our behavior in Ukraine and Israel's behavior, especially in Gaza. So what he's saying is now they want to complain because it's hurting them. Wasn't so bad when it was directed against brown-skinned people before, but now Europe is on the menu.
Yes, and certainly all these countries that have been part of NATO, we've gone over this many times on this show, that this, ever since the demise of the Soviet Union and Germany then in the 90s, the U.S. U.S. corporations and the others around the world were trying to pick Russia clean, and the the head of Russia tried to object. Wasn't it until 2000, when Putin got into power, that he really started making a much more concerted effort to stop the agreed upon idea that NATO would not move to the east, that they would not grow. And this is the promise given in return for East and West Germany being able to reunite. And so these countries, Germany now, is really, really, really forgetting about all this, but they're really becoming more and more of they're talking as if they want to really do a lot more in this world.
A couple more points, high points or low points, I should say, of that history is we've been dropping out one after another of anti-nuclear weapons treaties, some of the more important treaties and agreements addressing some of the most dangerous situations. Bush dropped out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty. And Iran had upheld its part of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Agreement, and Trump dropped out of that. And now we have the New START Agreement, which could have been simply renewed for a year on existing terms, and they're not even doing that. That's expiring in just two or three weeks. And so the history of the U.S. is we don't give a damn. We just violate or discard whatever agreements seem to be inconvenient. Again, I see a real continuity of agenda here. Trump inherited this discarding of nuclear treaties. Trump inherited the Patriot Act mass surveillance and the world's largest military machine. So, it's gotten worse for sure. But we've got to look at the continuity here.
Yes, and as you drill down, and you see it isn't just the Republicans. It's the neoliberal Democrats and others that have really brought this all to the fore. The Zionist Democrats who just ignored whatever awful mess that was meted out to the Palestinians. All this is there, and it's we are now part of the world. We are now part of the time when we try and straighten out all these things.
And I believe they're in panic over their deepest commitment in all of these scenarios, which is in Ukraine. It's been built up for a decade since the groundwork was laid in the 90s, as Don referred to there. And Ukraine is being devastated, losing millions of people to exile or to death. And Ukraine's losing. There's no way around it. And I think this is causing panic at the U.S. administration level, because they don't want to let it go, and yet they would like to get out of it.
Yes, and Dave, we've gone over many times, this war did not have to happen. And it's back in just after they were in 2002, there was a Istanbul Agreement that was initialed, and the would have stopped the whole after 1 month or so, the whole thing, and the whole war. So that's almost 4 years ago, and instead of allowing that to go through to stop the war, then UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson flew to Kiev, talked to Zelensky, and saying, well, the West doesn't want you to stop this. We will support you. We will continue it on. So this has been, this is why I call it the U.S.-NATO war, and that Russia is just only going along because the U.S. and NATO refused to allow Ukraine to make peace.
Several opportunities, 2014, 2015, 2021, Putin and Russia propose a new security arrangement for all of Europe. Then there's the 2022 agreement that Don just referred to that, again, could have ended the war. The model there, by the way, was the District of Tyrol in southern Italy, which is had been and is still granted more autonomy. And this was the model for Donbass, the heart of the war in Ukraine. But, again, chances for peace were deliberately ignored, destroyed because of the U.S. dominant force, which is making war, and we didn't believe that we could be defeated. It's happening. They don't want to admit it, but it's happening. I think the current back and forth with Alaska and then going to Moscow and then going to Moscow again is largely a pretense, the form of the diplomacy that's basically a cover for overt as well as covert military action. I just don't think that we have yet engaged in any serious negotiations while recognizing what Russia's fundamental position has been all along. Neutrality for Ukraine would have prevented all of this slaughter, and that was in their 1991 constitution, which we overthrew with the coup.
And to allow the Russian language, which had been recognized as being one of the two predominant languages within the Ukraine. Instead, there was 8 years of attack on the that area, eastern Ukraine, and so it's been a defense of that area, an actual defense that they were attacked. 14,000 people were killed in that 8 years, so it was no small thing.
And their primary church, Eastern Orthodox Church, was also discriminated against and attacked by the Kiev regime.
So it's not understanding, difficult to understand, but so much of the media doesn't, and they just, it's as if this 2022 agreement that could have ended the war is never referred to.
Yeah, you don't hear mention Istanbul. That's where they had this agreement within their grasp.
So it's we got, Dave, you have something else to read today.
Well, this is after an end to the political discussion. But I want to make an important announcement. Northern Sun News needs new blood to carry on this program. After more than 40 years of Northern Sun News being brought to you by Don Olson, now in 2026, it is time to find a new host. If you are interested in radio and in maintaining alternative voices in politics, please consider helping Northern Sun News to maintain and improve this program. If you're interested, contact me or Don Olson. I'm going to give you my email address. It's Dave G Coop, my initial Dave G COOP. That's at gmail.com. Dave G Coop at gmail.com. Either Don or I will get back to you. We're looking for people with energy and interest in politics and in radio to help with the future of Northern Sun News.
Yes, being on the air covering political things is a vital way of being part of this community and a good way of exercising how you see the world and helping other people to understand more and more what's going on and to understand helping people who are trying to make change. Now, I want to call your attention to the fact that next Tuesday, January 27th, KFAI is going to have the first ever almost all of the day on social change or groups that are trying to make the world a better place. So it's going to be, I think it's from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. or something like that. Anyway, I'm going to be doing a show with Dave at 4 p.m., 4 to 5 p.m. So there's, want to stay tuned, stay alert for that next week. But tomorrow is a general strike, and I hope all of us can make ways of doing things. 2 o'clock, many organizations, many businesses are not going to be operating, but we, 2 o'clock, there will be a march and rally.
Fourth in Portland downtown, the park by the stadium. Fourth in Portland. It's going to be a huge scene, I'm sure, despite the extreme cold. So if you are going out, be sure you dress warmly.
Yes, we're in Minnesota, so we're tough. But it's going to, you got to really, really dress, of course. And it's, we'll be going, I think I'm reaching the end of what I had for today. And so this has been the Northern Sun Radio News Show with your host, Don Olson, along with Dave Gudnick. And I'm going to bring up.
Welcome to MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds.
When Fritzy and Benny Haskell opened their flagship liquor store in downtown Minneapolis in 1934, 1 year after Prohibition was repealed, gin, fizzes, and brandy were all the rage. The business was put in Fritzy's name because, as Bill Ward, wine columnist for the Star Tribune, explains, Benny had a somewhat colorful past.
He had been a bootlegger and a boxer during Prohibition, but he had run afoul of the law a couple of times, so it was not going to work for him to get a license to have a liquor store.
Soon after the store opened, Fritzy established herself as a purveyor of fine French wines. In 1935, she toured the vineyards of France, bringing back a container of wine, which became the first French wine sold in the United States. And with that first container of French wine, Fritzi made her mark on history. Again, Bill Ward.
She did it longer than anybody, not only before or during her time, but even since then. No, there isn't a woman, especially who was really active in buying a lot of great wine and selling great wine, than she was.
Fritzi Haskell continued to promote fine wines for the next 40 years, and Haskell still has a reputation as one of the best wine shops in the country.
MN90 is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities. Made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Online at mn90.org.
Okay. It's just a little bit before 2 o'clock, and my name is